From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor On Your Health. I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. And if you have a question, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, should you let your dog lick your face? Or for that matter, someone else's dog lick your face.
Or your dog lick someone else's face.
Absolutely. We've got all of the permutations of that question, which we will answer for sure. And then parental absence in early childhood. What does it mean? And what does it mean for us as a society to help kids whose parents are absent for one reason or another? Interesting data that came from the Archives of Disease and Childhood. Very important if you have a child or know a child who has needs.
And our recipe today, Zorba.
Butter lettuce salad with goat cheese and pickled grapes. And I have to tell you, pickled grapes has become one of my favorite go-to recipes during parties when I want to bring something unusual over. You will want to hear this recipe. It is wonderful.
Pickled grapes. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. To the phones we go now. 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us from Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Really good today. What can we do to help you out?
So I was calling because I try and be very health conscious when eating. I try to eat organic meat, organic dairy, whatever I'm eating, organic. But I keep hearing this constant ongoing battle as to whether or not meat is actually good for you in your diet. So I'm wondering, with the way that our diets have been evolving over the years, is meat really something that we could start letting go of? Or is this just another diet fad, another diet kind of craze that's going on across the nation?
Well, I want to ask where you are right now on the continuum of meat consumption. How much meat do you eat in, say, a given week or day or hour?
I'm not a huge meat eater. I was vegetarian a long time ago, and I just kind of enjoy that cuisine just by nature. I'm not really a huge meat eater, and I try and stay away from red meat.
So I think meat and animal products are just fine in moderate amounts. The real issue is we went nuts in America. Let's have, when I was a kid, we always sat down and we had a piece of meat every night. And it might have been chuck, it might have been liver, which I happen to like. Mm-hmm. My kids will never eat liver, but I happen to like. You know, but a basic chicken was not used. Chicken, when I was a child, was a more premier animal product because it was more expensive. And I think what you've got to do is find a balance. So is it a fad? No, I think it's a lifestyle choice. I don't think I would call vegetarianism a fad. Even veganism, maybe it's been a fad. If we look at, getting wheat out of our diet, I mean, I think that's a fad issue right now for many people, but some people feel much better on it. But Rob asked you a good question. Where are you? How much meat? What kind of meat do you eat?
Yeah, I would say chicken. I always try and buy organic. But yeah, I'm not a huge meat eater. I was just wondering if in general, we could go ahead and scoop that out of our diet and be generally happier and healthier down the road.
Let me ask about the rest of your diet. You know, you eat the chicken or whatever a few times a week. The rest of the food, is it all Twinkies? Or is it, you know, you're eating the vegetables and other good stuff?
No. I hate running. I don't eat Twinkies. it's not worth it to me. I eat a lot of beans, I eat a lot of lentils, like quinoa, lots of greens. I love kale and spinach.
See, that is the issue. If you look at the Mediterranean diet is the king of diets. It's been shown. Less heart disease, less stroke, less cancer, 30% drop in heart disease, 7,000 people, major diet that was done, published in the New England Journal of Medicine. There's no doubt that is the best diet. The Mediterranean diet is not animal product free. It uses small amounts of animal products. And if you look at the way they eat, I've been to France, I've been to Spain. They don't put a big chunk of steak on your plate. If you're going to have something, you're actually going to have a meat product. There's a little bit of meat. There's about 4 ounces. And that is perfectly fine. Best animal products, by the way, remember, are fish. Fish twice a week, huge difference. That's one of the issues about it. So I think what you do is you pick your lifestyle. I think it's the same with organic. You pick a lifestyle that works for you. And the real issue is cut down on meat if you're eating too much of it. Vegetables, legumes, great things.
So I think the verdict here is we're feeling pretty good about her diet.
I think so.
All right. Here's my one last bit of advice. You're in a good good place. Don't worry about the food so much. You're doing great. Worry about other things. Does that
all
work for you?
Worry about other things. And maybe she's a happy person. And it's nothing to worry about. You have a great day. Thanks for your call.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, speaking of historical vegetarianism, I read somewhere, I think it was Pythagoras, you know, the guy with the theorem,
yeah,
right, about the triangles. Yeah. So he had these followers. This is a weird scene.
No, he was a whole movement.
Right, and they were vegetarians, but they also, I think they didn't eat beans because they thought they contained the souls of people or something like that.
Oh, that's interesting.
So no meat.
So maybe
no beans.
Beans were associated with gas, and gas produced
the spirit.
The spirits.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and read up some
more. Maybe they just ate beans because they didn't want the gas. I mean, did you ever think? And then they made up excuses.
Could be.
For why we're not eating beans.
Could be.
Well,
all those
that'll
Pythagoras
be another,
experts out there, let us know the whole
please
story.
Send an email to Zorba@WPR.org. I want to hear about all the Pythagorean experts. We know that at public radio, there is at least one Pythagorean expert out there that can tell us about the cult of Pythagoras and the absence of legumes.
They can square the circles and solve for the triangles. You can call in with your health questions, your lifestyle questions, or your Pythagorean theorem questions at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, to our topic now, this is an important one. All about dogs.
Well, I have a dog. Are you a dog? You're not a dog.
I like dogs fine. I like other
kind
people's
of an,
dogs.
What kind
fine.
Of an animal do you have in your house with your kids?
We currently have no animals.
But you had
we've had cats and a snake.
And a snake. Okay, so we won't talk about a snake licking your face.
Because this is about dogs.
I am a dog person.
My
wife and I, Penny, are dog people. We have dogs for the rest of our lives. I have two wonderful patients that live outside of Madison Richland Center. Their dog died. Their dog and our dog played together on their farm. And when their dog died, they said, you know, we're afraid to get another dog because we're going to die before the dog does. She's in her late 80s. He's in her early 90s. And I said, you know what? You raise a good dog, somebody will take that dog. So instead of getting one dog, they got two dogs.
Okay.
And they are happy. I love dogs. And you know what? My dog licks my arm and sometimes my dog licks my face.
And there's the question. And people are wondering, should we let dogs lick
well,
faces?
It's very interesting. Now, dogs have bacteria in their mouth, as you can imagine. And dogs put their nose in places and their mouth in places that we don't put our nose and mouth.
True.
Dogs like to lick butt. You know, that's
it's a dog thing.
It's a dog thing, not a human thing. And they've got Clostridium. They've got something called E. coli. They have Salmonella. They have Campylobacter. They have a whole bunch of things. So you would think that people with dogs would come into the office all the time with all kinds of infections from their dogs. And the answer is they don't. But one of the issues when we find unusual bacteria within the body is we look at the animals that are around it. So I think there are two things. And I want to talk about cats for a minute for the cat people. I think one of the issues are it's not a great idea for you to kiss your dog on its lips. I mean, that's kind of, you know, licking the skin is one thing, but licking the face is not a great idea. So I think minimizing or getting rid of it is probably a good thing. And frankly, I do not kiss my dog on his lips. You know, I don't do that. It's not not something.
A lot of people do.
Yeah, but I don't do it. But I mean, the reality is, and if you've got infections in your body, if you go to your doctor and you've got abdominal infections, make sure you tell them you have a dog that licks your face because that will help them find what's going on. Now, let's move on to cats.
Okay, let's
cats are a different issue. Cats actually have something called pasturella, and a cat bite is much more likely to cause a serious infection than a dog bite because they often have pasturella. They don't eat feces. Dogs will eat feces. Cats do not eat feces. They clean themselves all the time, but they harbor pasturella. So the answer is, for cats, it's probably even a better idea for a cat not to lick your face, but it's a good idea for a cat not to lick a wound on your body because they like to lick open wounds. And because
really?
They have pasturella may get infected into the wound, and that can actually cause a problem. So make sure your cat doesn't lick your wound.
I mean, that's kind of standard operating procedure for me, not letting random animals lick open wounds.
No, when I've got a wound on with my dog, I don't have a cat in the house because I'm allergic, but when I have a wound on my body, my dog likes to lick the wound.
Wow.
You know, I have to keep him away from it because that's what dogs do. You know what? You're clearly not a dog person and you have not had enough cats.
Well, I've had a lot of cats, and I got to ask, though.
Well, you don't have cats that lick your wounds,
the cat disease that we're worried about, there's pastorella. Named after Dr. Zorba Pastor?
Yeah, right.
you discovered this? No.
So, 1-800-462-7413.
We'll move along.
I got
so
the number right.
Zorba claims no responsibility for
Zero.
This disease that appears to bear his name.
I have to tell you, when Penny and
You're
I
dodging the question,
were in
sir.
France years ago, and we went to the Pasteur Institute, and they asked us what
like
our
Louis
name
Pasteur.
Was, and we said Pasteur, and they said, oh, are you related? And I said, no.
You're
no.
missing
it's,
a U.
It's the Polish. It's the Polish.
From the Polish pastors. Do you have a question for Dr. Zorba? You can join in at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Back to our callers now. Zorba, we'll go to Chicago, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. I have an issue, a problem. Well, not me, my husband. About 3 months ago, he got the bad virus or a cold or asthma or allergy or something. And after the event was over, about 3 weeks it lasted, mm-hmm. he lost his taste and smell buds. And as of today, he still cannot taste any flavor in the food. Mm-hmm. He can't smell. Mm-hmm. He now has phantom smells, mm-hmm. and he smells smoke mm-hmm. all the time.
Wow.
And I was hoping that Dr. Zorba could shed a little light on this. Mm-hmm. Both me and my husband have done some internet search, and it kind of almost sounds like the science don't always understand this either. Do you have any insight on it?
So he got his cold. What, explain a little bit. Was it a regular cold? What actually happened to him? And that was how many weeks or months ago was that? 3 months ago?
About 3 months ago. It was really strange, he said. It was something different.
Sure. How old is he?
He is 54.
Does he have allergies at all?
Yes. As a child, he uh-huh. had bad childhood allergies, which he grew out of. And he does get allergies every now and then when he is in an environment that causes it, like dust and mouse hair and whatever not.
So yeah. What is he taking anything for his allergies?
Albuterol.
Okay, albuterol for.
Inhaler.
But so he's got a bit of asthma. Is that what he has?
Yes.
He's got some wheezy.
Every now.
Does he
yeah.
smoke cigarettes?
No, but he does smoke cigars.
Uh huh. And he's been smoking for a long time. Obviously,
smokes. Yeah.
How many cigars a day does he smoke? By the way.
Probably only one every week and a half to 2 weeks.
Okay, so he doesn't smoke a lot
every
of cigars.
Day, no.
Okay.
No.
Any change in anything else? Does he have any movement problems? Does he have a tremor at all?
No.
Anything else? Any change in his ability to write? Has his writing changed at all?
No.
Okay. Well, the reason is sometimes a lack anosmia, which is the inability to smell, can actually be a sign of Parkinsonism, and that's why I asked that. It's an unusual sign that can develop. I don't think that's what he has, because you would see something else, but that particular thing can be the first step in Parkinson. I think what happened was something happened to his nose in the infection. Like you said, there's a lot of science that we don't know about, but there are a couple of things that are worthwhile trying. So a steroid nasal spray in the back of the nose for 1 to 2 months can make a difference. The spray is Flonase. Flonase used to be by prescription only. It's now over the counter. It might be cheaper to get it from your doctor by prescription if you have a copay. But if not, Flonase, that's the name of the drug. I haven't seen a generic. There may be a generic out there. Maximal dose is 2 squirts in the morning, 2 squirts in the evening in each nostril. And what you want to do is you want to put it in your nostril, kind of lay down, try to get it to soak into the back, to open up the sinuses into the back, because we taste through our nose and our tongue. We only taste sugar, salty, sweet, sour, and something called umami, which is sort of the fullness of food. That's the only thing through our tongue. The rest is through our nose. That's number one. That's the number one most important thing. The next thing he can try is over-the-counter Sudafed, again, to open up the nose symptomatically, 30 milligrams 3 times a day. You have to sign for it, because you've got to sign for Sudafed because it's used to make methamphetamine. Mm-hmm. So you just have to sign for it. I would take both of those for a month. There's a good chance it's going to come back. He's got some swelling in the back of his sinuses, basically where his nasal cavities are. As long as he doesn't have signs of Parkinsonism, hasn't hit his head or had a stroke or anything like that. Something else I would recommend is no cigars for a couple of months. Just get it off there. Mm-hmm. We just know smoke is bad. What does he do for a living? Does he work in a factory or anything like that?
No. He works as a researcher, so he sits all day in an office.
Okay. Yeah. But he's in a good environment from you know, from an air point of view.
Yeah.
I would try those things. Usually that will often come back and it just takes a while. But the issue is you have to, he has to be careful with food, because if he can't taste, that means he won't necessarily be able to taste when food is bad. And that can be a serious issue. So you've got to kind of bird dog it for him and make sure that stuff in the refrigerator isn't there too long.
You're going to be his food tester, exactly.
You're the food tester to make sure he is not poisoned. That's exactly right. You are the taster of the king, your husband.
You can make something out of this. Like, oh, better check that ice cream sundae of yours.
Oh, that first bite,
I didn't get any banana in that one. I better eat some more.
Exactly.
You just get some good freeloading in there.
It is. All right, we'll Dr. Zorba, I forgot to mention one thing. He did go and have an MRI done.
Yes, but that probably MRI of the brain and of the sinuses.
Okay, correct.
And that was to make sure he didn't have a stroke or a tumor that was in there. And that was illogical. That's one of the things that was for. So, good luck.
Okay.
Good luck as the taster, your new occupation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
You too.
Well, I hope that helps out. Good luck. That would be a bummer not to taste all the food you're eating. I mean, even
well,
if there's
it's
no other wider concerns.
We have a cousin of ours, and she fell through a floor. She lives in New York. She has a loft. She fell through the floor of a loft. She hit the back of her head in the occiput where those sensory endings are, and she has not been able to taste for probably 20, 30 years. So what happens is certain things taste unusual. Her husband has to be very careful. Vodka tastes the same as something sweet. Vodka tastes sweet. Isn't that interesting?
Weird.
She can't tell if there's alcohol in a drink, so she has to be very careful when she goes to a party. She cannot taste alcohol because alcohol obviously is through the nose. But that's one of the unusual things. Vodka is a sweet taste.
That's one of those things you don't think about until you lose it, I guess, how important that sense of taste and smell is.
And when you drink an alcoholic drink like vodka, you're obviously, you know, smelling other things that overcome the sweet taste. So.
Well, before we take a break, Zorba, how about we let one of our listeners give us a piece of his mind in a segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
The following email came to us from a listener named Mike in Dubuque, Iowa. Mike writes, Zorba, I heard your program today and you asked why anyone would choose to go barefoot outside. Mike says, there's a really simple answer. Some of us like it. I'm nearly 60 and have hated wearing shoes as long as I can recall. So I go barefoot whenever I can. It's pretty safe. There's really very little broken glass in most areas. Likewise with other hazards. You learn to watch where you're going. Not a bad skill to have. And you tend to walk with a lighter step. I get the occasional small cut or scrape, but those can be dealt with very easily and safely, much the same as a cut on a finger. I've heard all the arguments against being barefoot outside, and they really don't hold much water. Honestly, I think shoes cause far more problems than going barefoot.
All right. He's not talking about barefoot in the grass. He's talking about barefoot
everywhere.
Walking down the street.
Sidewalk.
And that's in Iowa. I wonder if he goes barefoot in the middle
of the
winter.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, Dubuque is cold in the winter, like Madison. It is cold in the wintertime. Well, good for him. That's what I have to say. Good for you. You're going barefoot in that. One of the issues in the South was that going barefoot was a real issue with hookworm. And back in the 1920s and 30s, hookworm was rampant in the South. And Southern men were, on the whole, 1 foot shorter than Northern men because they had hookworm.
Because of hookworm.
Which retarded their growth when they were teenagers. And they were never able to actually recover their growth. And then John D. Rockefeller, through a guy named Flexner, solved the problem by giving tons and tons of free shoes to boys, young boys and young girls in the South. And young girls were also shorter, but there was like 4 to 6 inches. And it basically solved the problem. That's how they got rid of hookworm, was through shoes. So I know that Iowa never had a hookworm problem like they did in the South. You're walking and you feel good. Good for you.
Do you think Zorba put his foot in his mouth? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or, of course, in Facebook.
Our recipe is coming up along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to discuss right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with the Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for the good doc. But before we get back to our callers, Zorba, let's talk about this recipe, butter lettuce salad with goat cheese and pickled grapes.
That's right. Really good recipe. I saw it in the Wall Street Journal. You're going to love it. It's a great recipe. Fun this time of year. And we're going to do it in two parts.
Right.
Two parts.
And the first part is the pickled grapes. And I've got to say, since Zorba saw this recipe, everybody, he cannot stop talking about these pickled grapes.
That's exactly right. I love this recipe. I brought it to several different places I've gone to with friends, and they'll taste it and they'll go, what is this, an olive? And it's not an olive. They can't quite make out what it is initially. It's a wonderful, wonderful recipe. So we're going to start with that recipe.
Let's pickle some grapes first, right?
Okay. So 2 cups of seedless red and green grapes. What I've done with this, because I like the way it looks, is I'm using red grapes and green grapes. And there are different kinds of red grapes. So at my grocery store, if I see 3 kinds of red grapes or 2 kinds of red grapes, I will get both those. You know, there's only 1 kind of green grape. So the nicer looking grapes, the better they look. The more robust they look, those are the ones you want to use.
2 cups of seedless grapes.
That's right. 3/4 cup of distilled white wine vinegar. So it's regular white wine vinegar. Get a good brand. 3/4 cup.
3/4 cup white vinegar.
Well, 3/4 cup of water.
3/4 cup water.
Teaspoon of kosher salt.
Teaspoon of kosher salt, maybe a little more to sprinkle in if you want.
If you want to. Sprinkle a teaspoon of sugar.
Teaspoon of sugar.
2 small garlic cloves, peeled and crushed. Do not use garlic out of a jar. In this case, it's got to be fresh garlic cloves.
2 small cloves of fresh garlic, peeled and crushed.
Now, the leaves from 1 2-inch sprig of rosemary. I've done it where I just put the rosemary in. Doesn't taste as good. You've got to take the little petals off and use those little petals. Do not use the stick that the petals are on because it will change the taste.
All right, 1 sprig of rosemary leaves only.
And 1/8 teaspoon of dried red chili flakes.
Oh, that's just a tiny little bit of red chili flakes.
Let's make it. So, pack the grapes into a glass jar. I've done this, by the way, in a plastic jar. Doesn't work as
well.
Don't do it. It's got to be a glass jar. Pour the vinegar and water into a saucepan. Bring over medium heat. Add salt, sugar, garlic, rosemary, and chili flakes. Bring to a simmer. Cook 1 minute. No more than 1 minute. Remove the pan from the heat. Pour the brine over the grapes. You put the grapes in the jar up to the top. You put the brine over the grapes all the way up to the top, and then what you do is that's literally all you have to do. Put a top on that completely, put it in the refrigerator, you are done. Now we're going to make the second part of the recipe. You're basically done.
That's
so
our
let me
grapes.
Tell you may
They're
have
in
some,
the fridge
you're,
now.
You're going to have some brine left over, which we're going to use for our salad, but you are now done with the grapes. It takes about 2 hours to work, but let me tell you, it tastes better 1 and 2 days later. Bring it to a friend. I now make 5 or 6 of these at a time.
You're just showing up your Johnny pickled grapes.
I am showing off my Johnny pickled grapes. Okay, we're going to talk about the brine later. Now let's make the butter lettuce salad with goat cheese and pickled grapes. Okay, start out with 1/2 cup of pecan halves.
1/2 cup of pecan halves.
1 cup of pickled red and green grapes, the ones you just made.
This is our cup of these grapes we just did.
2 teaspoons of Dijon mustard.
2 teaspoons of Dijon mustard.
Juice of 1/2 lemon.
Ooh, a lemon, a juice from half of it.
That's right. 1/2 cup of that pickled grape brine.
Oh, there's our leftover brine. Okay, 1/2 cup of that brine.
No, say pickled grape vine.
Pickled grape brine. Pickled grape brine. Pickled grape brine. But I am a professional. Don't try this at home.
It's very difficult. 1/2 cup of olive oil, a little more if you want to for taste.
1/2 cup or so of olive oil.
Fresh black pepper ground.
Freshly ground black pepper.
2 large heads of butter lettuce torn.
Large heads of butter lettuce. 2 of them torn up.
If you like goat cheese, put in goat cheese. I've been like it. Some people like it.
I bet it goes really well with those pickled grapes.
Exactly. So preheat the oven at 250 degrees. Spread the pecans on a baking sheet. Toast until fragrant. That's about 15 or 20 minutes. Set it aside. Add mustard and lemon juice to the remaining cup containing that brine, which we had left over from making the pickled grapes. Whisk it to combine it. Add olive oil. Whisk it again thoroughly to emulsify it. Then season it with salt and pepper. Now take 1 cup of those grapes. Grapes and you're going to use them. Divide the lettuce among six bowls or plates. Scattered some of those pickled grapes and pecans. You can have the grapes if you want to, or you can just put them in whole over each of those lettuce cups. Then whisk the vinaigrette again. Drizzle it over the salad. Grind the pepper over each. If you're going to use the goat cheese, put that in the middle, and you've got a wonderful taste. Think about it. Goat cheese, pickled grapes, a little brine, little mustard over a salad. You've got a dynamite salad.
And this, you've been making this for other people.
I've been making this.
And people are loving this.
They love it. They love it. The pickled grapes are the best part of this because they have never tasted pickled grapes before. And let me tell you, if you've never had pickled grapes, this is your holiday recipe.
And do you just keep them around as a snack? Forget the salad?
I do. I do.
You're
I keep
just
them
munching
in the refrigerator. I use
pickled
them
grapes.
Like I do with olives. I put them out when people come over and we're going to have a little party with like chips, and I put them out. I put out, frankly, olives in one bowl, pickled grapes in the other, and I don't give any introduction. So they initially think it's an olive.
I mean, do we have a problem with these pickled grapes? Are we at intervention?
We're not quite at intervention. That's right. I'm not having them for breakfast anymore. That's the real issue.
Pickled grapes, not just for breakfast anymore. And Zorba, where can listeners find this fantastic
recipe?
Well,
you know, in the old days, you could write us at Wisconsin Public Radio. I'll give the address, but I don't think anyone
Nobody's
would really
do that.
Want it. So go to ZorbaPastor.org. You can take down this recipe, other fine recipes at ZorbaPastor.org. Or don't forget, the other portal of Facebook is still working as of today. No bot problem in Facebook. It is working.
Back to our callers we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We go to Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi, my name is Donna. I have a question about the eating things that have been fermented and how it's beneficial for your entire body.
Sure.
And
what did you want to know?
I was just wondering if you took things like sauerkraut and heated them for like to make dinner, or even when you use sourdough bread, which I make a lot of, when you put it in the oven, are all those benefits destroyed?
Oh, are you killing all the beneficial little guys, the bacteria, by heating them up? Interesting.
Right. You know, that's a really good question. So first of all, fermenting has certain benefits. It has certain benefits in the bacteria that are good bacteria if you ferment the right way. So if you ferment sauerkraut, you do it the right way, it's safe. It's going to be good. When it comes to pickling, of course, we have to actually heat things up because unless we're going to put them in the refrigerator, refrigerator pickles are great. I've had them all the time. In fact, we just talked about pickled grapes, another really good thing. It's in the refrigerator. It's good. Once you start to heat things up, vitamins, probiotics, you know, probiotic bacteria that are in there do begin to get destroyed. But on the other side of heating things up, sometimes proteins and carbohydrates are able to be digested better in the body. And that's one of the reasons. When we look at meat, for instance, one of the reasons we heat it up is we're much more able to digest the proteins. So I think what you want to do is do a balance. I think you want to, if you're looking at may have more fermented things in your diet, you want to make sure you eat some things that are fermented and refrigerated or not refrigerated, and then you can have other things that are heated up, and that probably gives you the benefit in both ways.
How do you like to eat that sauerkraut?
I do eat it uncooked, but I know I get it from the can.
You get it from the can. Well, the canned sauerkraut is okay, but that's been pasteurized. In your store, can you get sauerkraut in plastic containers Well, you know, that is a sauerkraut that I think has not been pasteurized, although I'm not really sure. In both cases, you're going to get some benefit, but the stuff in the can has definitely been heated.
Yeah. So I try to make it by myself, and it just didn't work out. I just can't get it.
It is tough to get it. You love sauerkraut, don't you, if you made it yourself?
I do. I try to make things myself.
As far as making your own sauerkraut, are you hunting around for other recipes? Maybe it was a recipe that just didn't work for you. There was a lot of information out there.
Couple.
Well, you're going to get benefit from eating it. Sauerkraut
is not the stuff you made, though.
But sauerkraut is not the stuff you make. So keep eating fermented foods, and you will get healthier.
Good luck, and good luck with that next batch of sauerkraut. Third time's the charm, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you. you.
Thanks a lot.
You know, there's a whole festival in Wisconsin, Fermentation Festival.
Where
they celebrate. It's in the Reedsburg area.
It
already happened this year, but they'll have, you know, learn how to make sauerkraut, bread, anything, cheese. I've got a recipe talking about fridge pickling you just mentioned, a zucchini relish I found online. I tweeked it a bit. It is fantastic.
Okay, we'll do
this
Rob's
recipe. When you end up with those monster
Rob
zucchinis.
Will be the guest chef on the next Rob's Recipe Show.
A recipe that I adapted from an online recipe. I won't take all the credit for it this time. Before our break, Zorba, let's tackle an email question from an anonymous listener who writes, Dr. Zorba, how do you know when it's time to find a new doctor? And here's their story. I used to go to a fabulous primary care physician whom I regularly recommended to everyone. Lately, he's a changed man. Hmm. I'm also treated by two specialists, a
physiatrist.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
A physiatrist deals with movement disorders, chronic pain, joint disorders, like a rheumatologist. Sometimes if a rheumatologist can't get the answer, often you go to a physiatrist.
That's a new one to me.
Ways to walk and things like that. They often do a lot of stuff with post-stroke.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a physiatrist and a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. I have back pain, which is treated with neural ablation treatments and narcotics. Mm-hmm. I also have fibromyalgia. The psychiatrist treats my virtually lifelong problem with regular counseling, mm-hmm. antidepressants, etc. These specialists understand that pain and depression are best friends. They work together to treat both of those conditions. But my primary care physician opposes most of the treatments that the other physicians prescribe, wants me to stop taking all of the drugs prescribed by the specialists. Recently, after I had an episode of severe stomach pain, he told me that he had not suggested I take ibuprofen. When I clearly recall him suggesting it repeatedly, the last time I saw him, he referred to my psychiatrist as a bad doctor.
That's very interesting.
So my primary care physician's behavior has become particularly abrasive in the past few months. I've tried to be compassionate, but the bad doctor comment was clearly unprofessional. Is it time to find someone new?
Of course. Absolutely. There clearly is something going on, and her doctor does not want to have her as a patient. I mean, the reality is, if the doctor called the psychiatrist a bad doctor, we have some issues there. Either the psychiatrist may have had some problems. I mean, I don't know the case, but it really is unprofessional to talk about something like that, or to use that phrase.
Right.
Also, you might say, I think you ought to see somebody else. I don't agree with what he has to say. So here's the issue. If you have two or three doctors working for you, you've got to have a captain of the ship. You really do. And if the captain of the ship is not pleased with the specialist you're working with, you either have to change the specialist or change the captain. In a case like this, chronic pain, dealing with a psychiatrist and a physiatrist on multiple medications, these are very, very difficult problems for us to deal with as doctors, because we're often dealing with opioids, antidepressants, side effects from opioids. They may be high doses of opioids. Some people need those high doses. Frankly, some people do not. And it's an issue that we all grapple with in primary care. This doctor is not right for her. She should find another physician who is more compassionate to her care. And then she has to find somebody who basically either agrees with the specialist or she has to find someone else. Now, one recommendation I would have for finding another doctor is either to ask the physiatrist or the psychiatrist who they would recommend, because you want a primary care doc who they're used to working with, mm-hmm. and that's somebody who will probably give her the best care.
Is this something that comes often when the word narcotics or opioid drug comes up, where two doctors might reasonably disagree on an issue? I'm not talking about this case so much in particular.
It
now.
Is more and more of an issue. And what happens is, I was one of the doctors, as many other doctors, who believe that opioids in large doses were tolerated by people and that the addiction potential was not as great as we now know that it is. You know, back in the mid-90s, well, probably the mid-90s to the late 90s, the idea was that we had opiophobia, fear of opioids, because opioids could be used with impunity, that we didn't really have a problem with people who are addicted to opioids. If they weren't alcoholics, basically they would not become addicted. And the answer was no. And we in medicine were wrong. And so the answer now is not to continue on high-dose opioids, but to say, hey, you're on this dose of opioids. Let's try something a little bit less, see if you tolerate it. And I've done it with my patients, and I've discovered that lower doses actually will work well, and they can actually adapt. But the issue with opioids, antidepressants, the disease of fibromyalgia, mm-hmm. and depression, they all link together. A captain of the ship has to be good, because all these doctors have to be on the same page as the patient.
Do you have a question for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come, as well as another interesting topic and our medical Mythbuster segment, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we take another caller, an important topic, some new research you were looking at.
Right. I think this is really good research, very important research that looks at parental loss in early childhood and what it does. So, first of all, what is the study? Study is 19,000 children. These are in the UK. It's called the UK Millennium Cohort Study. So they started roughly with 19,000, 20,000 kids, and they've been watching them. Okay, they started in the year 2000 through 2002, brought the kids in, looked at them, measured their height, their weight. These are infants that are born, children that are born, to follow them over time to see what goes on in their life. So they look back periodically at important things. And they looked at parental absence. Okay, what if the parent or parents are gone, either by death, relationship breakup, illness, and so on? What they've discovered is something very interesting. There's a heightened risk of starting to smoke and starting to drink before the child becomes a teenager.
With the absent parent.
That's right. So if an absent parent, that child is much more likely to smoke, much more likely to drink. And there's other data that shows that they're much more likely to be and not do well in school and have decreased physical health and, if you will call it, mental health in children in the first year of life if there's a parental breakup. So in other words, that first year of life is critically important to have one or better off two parents who are actually raising and nurturing a child. It is the breakup that is the issue, the breakup of the home.
So what do we do with this information? Is there some way to help a kid in that situation? Because this is going to happen sometimes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you're looking at a child, you're looking at a home, you're looking in the environment for the child. The environment is breaking up. That means it takes a village to raise a child. That if you know somebody or if you're somebody where there's been a breakup, then you have to spend even more time with your child doing what you do as a child when they're first born. You know, that first year of life, I've got a grandchild who's now a year and a quarter. And it's really that first year of life where you're cuddling them, you're holding them, you're showing them that life is good. There's the touching, there's the nurturing that goes on. And that's what's missing in this case. And that produces problems even before a child is a teenager.
So if this is happening to your friend, your family member, your neighbor, this step up, reach out, and help out, either give them time to parent more or help be an extra parent
I think you hit it right on the head. I think it's a matter of supporting the person who is the primary person responsible for raising the child. That's one issue, very important, because they're the number one thing in a child's life. And then yourself stepping in, not just to support them, but stepping in and maybe helping raise that child, maybe doing something a little more. Sometimes we stay away from people who have relationship difficulties, and in the reality is we should actually go and help people more with relationship difficulties with a child because it helps the child live.
Back to your calls now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We'll go now to Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. I wanted to talk to the doctor about my diagnosis as having arrhythmia in my heart. And I also have a question about cell phones and the heart.
Did you have atrial fibrillation? Is that what you had?
Yes.
Are you on a blood thinner?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you're on a blood thinner.
First thing you did, take a blood thinner.
Okay, so you were on something called AFib, atrial fibrillation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the question is you're good with these reviews of what science has talked us?
Sure,
and
thank
it's
you.
About the, when I bought my new phone, they said, do not put your phone in your breast pocket. And I've been carrying my old phone in my breast pocket. And I wonder if that caused the arrhythmia, because I didn't have it 3 years ago.
It did not cause the arrhythmia, and I don't think there's any reason why you can't put it in your breast pocket. Not at all. There's no evidence.
That's what it says.
Well, they're wrong. There's no evidence that holding your phone next to your chest is going to do anything to your heart at all. It's not the way it works. Now, I'm going to go back. I want to go back to this arrhythmia for a minute. It is a common arrhythmia, and we don't know why it happens. We know that it's associated with other forms of heart disease, and we know that one of the upper chambers of the heart, the atrium, is deformed and is often associated with this arrhythmia. So it may be an architectural abnormality of the heart that causes this electrical disturbance. But the reality is the jury is out on what actually causes it. But there is no evidence at all that cell phones cause atrial fibrillation. And even though you saw something that said don't put it in your breast pocket, there is no scientific evidence for it at all. And so you don't have to put it in your breast pocket, but there's no evidence for it. It did not cause your atrial fibrillation.
Now, here's my question. I've never done that, a cell phone in my shirt pocket. Isn't that awful heavy? Doesn't it just kind of like warp your shirt out of... I'm not the style police or anything, but...
It's very convenient.
Yeah, I put it in my pocket. I put it in my pocket all the time. I put it when I have a jacket. When I have a sports coat, it's always in my pocket, right next to my heart.
Well, that I can see, a sports coat. Uh-huh. But I don't know, just like a shirt?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're not, as you said, you're not the fashion polista.
True.
So the reality is, that's it. So the answer is yes, you can continue to do it. Now, I want to get back to the AFib. Make sure with atrial fibrillation that you stay taking your blood thinner, because it's associated with a higher risk of stroke no matter what you do. But you lower that risk by about 50 to 70% by taking a blood thinner with it. And as long as you take the blood thinner correctly, that makes a difference. What are you on? What's the medicine that you're on right now for it?
Eliquis.
Yeah, Eliquis. Good drug. You don't need to have the proton blood test that we needed for warfarin. I highly recommend the newer drugs. They're easier. They're easier to manage.
And I want to ask you a question before we let you go. Is your phone one of the brands that's been recalled for catching fire and exploding? Because if so, I'd say keep it well away from that chest pocket.
No, it is not. It's a brand new phone, but they're the ones that say don't put it in your pocket.
All right.
Yes. Hmm. Well, maybe they were worried that it was going to explode and catch fire.
No, we'll check that out. Well, good luck dealing with that atrial fibrillation.
Okay, thank you.
If you have a phone that doesn't catch fire, you can give a call to Dr. Zorba at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, time again for our Medical Mythbuster segment. Today's question is from a listener named Randy in Spokane, Washington. He writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. My wife and I love the show. We always appreciate you telling it like it is."
Can
you please clear something up for me? Many of my coworkers lug around those giant water bottles all day long, sipping and occasionally guzzling from them. I recently asked one guy about his massive water bottle, and he gave me the classic line about making sure he got in his 8 glasses of water a day. But to me, 8 glasses sounds like a lot. So is the 8 glasses of water thing a myth, and is it possible to be overhydrated?
It is a myth. And it's a myth that's been propagated, I think, by the bottled water industry that say, hey, you've got to drink water, drink water, drink water. But society has changed. If you look at water fountains, used to be that you were in a water fountain, you drank some water, but water fountains now have water bottles, that will fill up your water bottle, mm-hmm. So people are drinking more. Here's the issue. If you are in a normal situation means you're not working on a chain gang outside, working really hard so that you can't really pay attention to what you're drinking. If you're not running a marathon so you can't have access to water, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you drink when you're thirsty. You don't drink when you're not thirsty. If you follow your urine, look at your urine. If urine is concentrated, you're not drinking enough. If it's not concentrated, you are drinking enough. The kidneys do not get flushed like a toilet. We do not flush our kidneys. We do not flush our toxins. We do not need 8 glasses of water a day. It has been a myth that continues to be propagated over and over and over again. But if you feel like you want to drink that much, by all means, enjoy it.
Randy, thanks for sending that along. How about you? Does something one of your coworkers said not hold water? Zorba can straighten it out. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it in an email to
Zorba at WPR.com. org.
Back to the phones we go at 1-800-462-7413. We'll go now to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you.
Well, I bet there's something we can help you out with.
I bet there is. My daughter, teenage daughter, is a tremendous athlete, and 2 years ago she took a very hard fall and ended up cracking two vertebrae.
Oh, wow.
It was L4 and T11.
What was she doing?
She's a figure skater, very competitive figure skater, and just happened to hit a hip at the proper place for this to happen. So the body tried to heal, most definitely. She took time off, but what happened was her whole body just went into, like, just a spiral, basically. And she ended up with fibromyalgia and arthritis through the spine.
How old is she?
She is now 17.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And off the ice for a long time and out of sports completely. And doctor after doctor, and finally a specialist said, look, this is, you know, what's going on. We have fibromyalgia, and he put her on some very strong medication.
Mm-hmm. Which was?
Tizanidine, several anti-inflammatories, then stomach medications, and then medication to sleep.
Wow,
and
lots of stuff.
To the point that she said, and she was beginning to heal and walk better, but was a zombie.
Sure.
So she decided that she is going to stop all medications. She discussed it with her doctor, and he agreed with her. He said, that's absolutely fine, as long as you can find a natural route that will help you. So in her research, she has found several natural items that will help, turmeric being one of them for the inflammation. But also, she's come across a lot of research for fermented food, such as kimchi or sauerkraut. And we're wondering, what is your take on going to an all-natural route instead of this very strong and harsh medication?
Well, I first of all, your daughter's 17. Big issue. Fibromyalgia at 17 versus fibromyalgia, we'll say, at 50 after an automobile accident is really a very different thing. And fibromyalgia are painful spots in the body. It's a diagnosis that was really made by a committee. You have to have minor spots, major spots in certain areas. She's got a rheumatologist. The real issue is she has an injury. And she's a 17-year-old girl, and life has changed. I mean, there's a lot of psychological stuff that you must have gone through with her. I mean, that's the primary thing we're looking at. By the way, was she on duloxetine, which is Cymbalta?
No, the doctor discussed it with her, and she felt that it was not the way to go.
Okay.
She said she was not depressed, although we saw many psychological changes.
Yeah, I want to just chime in on that for an instance. Mm-hmm. And full disclosure, for many years, 35 years, I've done clinical research on new pharmaceuticals. We did research on duloxetine. It's now a generic. And with this particular study, people with arthritis, we had to prove they didn't have depression. In other words, they had to come in, fill out a depression monitor. We had to do an evaluation, say you don't have depression. Half were put on the drug, half were not, because the question was, does the drug work for people who do not have depression?
But do have the pain.
But do have fibromyalgia or have arthritis. And the answer was, yes, it did. In other words, the drug worked for pain despite the fact that it was also an antidepressant. And with somebody who has mood changes, if it were my patient, I would say going the natural route is great. Turmeric, I would try. I would definitely try fermented foods and see if that made a difference. The training you do that she does, should pain should guide what she's doing. If she feels better with it, absolutely go with it. If that doesn't work, I would do a trial of 6 weeks of duloxetine, 60 milligrams daily, 30 milligrams for the first 2 weeks, 60 milligrams for the next 4 weeks, and see if that helps. Because once again, it helps for fibromyalgia, even with people who do not have depression. And once again, I would do it the natural way first. She's 17, and if she can add it naturally, that is a far, far, far better way to do it.
Well, good luck. I love that she's still in the game. She's still involved in skating. Good luck to you and her.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling in at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, before we head out today, let's break out your robe and gavel for another episode of Judge Zorba.
I am
ready. I am ready. To rock.
I've got the gavel.
He's wearing the robe.
It's in my hand. I'm going to do it.
Dr. Zorba, this comes from Rod in Wausau, Wisconsin, who writes, Dr. Zorba, I started taking two generic Aleve, it's the over-the-counter medicine, twice a day for soreness in the elbow area.
Mm-hmm. That's naproxen, anti-inflammatory.
Along with two extra-strength generic Tylenol.
Okay.
My wife is an RN and is against it because of concerns of kidney or liver damage. Mm-hmm. The only other items I take daily are 20 milligrams of Crestor, 81 milligrams of aspirin, mm-hmm. and a multivitamin.
Okay.
So should I have any concerns with possible kidney or liver damage?
Okay. So, first of all, who's right? The wife or the husband?
Correct. The suspense.
I will come down the wife.
The wife.
So here's the issue. And this is where we have to have a balance in taking over-the-counter medications. First of all, acetaminophen, which is Tylenol, in high doses, it's bad for the liver. If you are an alcoholic, you cannot have more than 2,000 milligrams a day of acetaminophen. So a regular acetaminophen tablet is 325 milligrams. You do the math. In arthritis strengths, acetaminophen is 650 milligrams. That means you can only have three a day. If you are not an alcoholic, if you're not drinking more than two drinks a day, mm-hmm. you're only having one drink a day, you can go up to 4,000 milligrams. Milligrams of Tylenol. That's one step. Now, what about anti-inflammatories? They run a risk. The risk is a slightly increased risk of heart attacks, not a major risk, but there is an increased risk of kidney damage in people who are older, in people who are predisposed to kidney damage, such as people with heart disease, liver disease, kidney disease, high blood pressure, and so on. So what you've got to do is find a balance between them. I would recommend, in this case, maybe go to one Aleve twice a day and see how that works, and then you make sure that you take the right amount of Tylenol. See if that works. If that works, you might want to stay in it. So in this case, your wife, the RN, gets the upper hand from Judge Zorba.
Do you have a debate you need settled? Add your case to Judge Zorba's docket by sending us an email at
zorba@wpr.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
At zorbapastor.org or through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor On Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor On Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1028Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.